This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From the TrackOn Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hi, everybody. Jeremy Scott here with you. I know it's a busy week outside of motorsports, busy week inside of motorsports as well. And hopefully you got all that wonderful leftover candy that's always on clearance. I know here it's kind of hard to find a miniature Reese's, which, as we all know, is the holy grail of all candy because of the equal chocolate to peanut butter ratio. But that's a discussion for another day. Here's what's going on today. We have John Norman, CEO of Evo, joining us here in just a little bit. Now, if you don't know what Evo is, it is a new concept to funding drivers, and they just signed a deal with Andretti Autosport. We'll let him answer all these questions and more. Following that, it's our Champions Edition for SCCA Pro Racing, at least the FIA version of it. We have Linus Lundqvist, as we know, set the world on fire as a driver generally. Set the world on fire in FR Americas. We'll talk to him and his next step up to stardom in Indy Lights. Also, Hunter Yaney coming off his FR Americas debut as the F4 champion. We'll chat with him as well. And as always, we bring in our driver analyst, Charlie Ante, to make sense of all the news of the week, and there's a lot of it with nobody really racing. I will say this, though. We want to congratulate Simon Sykes on his F1600 championship clinch this past weekend at Road Atlanta. So, as always, you can tweet us at Inside Open Wheel, email us insideopenwheel@gmail.com, leave us a voicemail at 815-714-9260. You also find us on Facebook. So, without further ado, coming up next, John Norman of Evo here on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
If you followed social media, or you have social media in you follow a lot of motorsports contacts, you've seen ads for Evo and wondered what it's all about. Well, Evo is a company that has now signed a partnership with Andretti Autosport. John Norman, the CEO, joins us. Thanks for joining us today. Really excited to learn more about this company and what it's all about, especially now that you have signed a partnership with one of the biggest teams in motorsports.
Yeah, we're very excited about that announcement, and since then we've gotten a lot of attention. So thank you for asking me to come on your podcast.
And before we get started, we know that Indy Lights had a hiatus. How's Ryan been doing in the IMSA Michelin Pilot Challenge this past season?
Well, he's doing great. He actually really enjoys the different style of racing and everything that the sports car racing can deliver as far as experience. You know, there's 30 some cars out on the track, and even though they're not all the same series, I think there's about 13 cars in the TCR series. But just in general, a lot of learning how to drive defensively and aggressively. So it's been a great experience for him, and he's currently very close to two more races, and hopefully he'll be bringing home the championship.
And let's go ahead and segue into that. Ryan was an Andretti Autosport driver, so how did this partnership between Andretti Autosport and Evo come about, obviously with Ryan in the mix?
Well, actually, about 2 years ago is when the concept was born, and it just so happened that we were in the middle of a racing season with Ryan racing with Andretti. So the relationship with Andretti had developed there, and it really wasn't about Ryan. It was about the sport in general, because we were sitting there now that we had been in the sport for 2 years and saw the challenges and the problems that have plagued the racing for years and years. And the conversation just sitting around, waiting at the races to get out on the track, I'm always, I call myself an opportunistic thinker, and was like, boy, there's got to be something we could do that could, you know, get the most talented to participate rather than just the ones that are well-funded. And we kept seeing that happen over and over again, and all these good drivers falling away and having to do something else. And just with me networking and coming up with a business plan, and when we found out that this problem exists not only in racing, but also in the majority of individual sports. So we're talking golf, tennis, boxing, MMA fighting. Pretty much, with, if you're an individual athlete, you're on your own to compete and to pay for everything until you get to the elite level where there's good money to be made. So we sort of wrapped up that whole concept, not only with racing, but with all these other sports, put together a business plan. And the most unique and creative part about this is that we figured out a way to include the fans. And now the ordinary fans can invest in Evo and participate in the success of the Evo athletes. So they're not just investing in one of the athletes, they're investing in the whole team, whether it's the drivers, the boxers, the golfers, whatever. You're invested in the whole thing.
Okay, so it's
really a great, a unique idea.
Okay, so it's separate from the what Justin Wilson brought to the field, where you're investing in the driver. Now you're just investing in the whole team.
Correct, and you're relying upon Evo, and in this case with racing, the Andretti team, to scout and find those drivers that might be on the edge of being able to continue, but they can't because of their funding issues. And the idea would be to scout them, sign them up, and in return for paying for their funding, their budget, that we get a percentage of, just like, you know, the Wilson setup, you still get a percentage of the athlete's winnings. But here you're invested in, like I said, we're pooling it all together, almost like a mutual fund.
Okay. So that's basically how Andretti Autosport's helping out with the Evo model, is finding these drivers, signing them up, and then whatever, you know, success they have, that success goes to the investors.
Correct.
Okay. Now, what are some of the expenses that go into racing that outsiders know about? I know you've been in sport as long as, you know, we've both been in sports, so we know that there are some outside expenses that some people may not know about. What would those expenses be?
Yeah, it's interesting. When I first got into racing with Ryan, we didn't understand the way the business worked and what all the expenses were. So it was eye-opening for me as well. Obviously, there's the car itself and the team and drivers at the lower levels, even through Indy Lights, are paying the race teams for the opportunity to drive that car. So there's a huge expense there, but the travel to each of the races, all the hotels, the food and everything associated with that. And then if a driver is able, there's testing. And a lot of times that's very expensive as well.
And you
the plan with Evo is that we're not just funding a driver, we're developing that driver. So in addition to, you know, the budget for driving with whatever race team that is, there is the nutritionist, there is the physical trainer. These are all expenses and things that a driver normally has to have in their team, or else they won't be able to compete against the guys that do have that. So those are some of those extra expenses in addition to just dealing with the car. They've got to be physically fit. They've got to be physically trained. Some of the drivers even have mental coaches to help them focus. So there's usually a big team behind anybody, even accountants and people like that.
John Norman of Evo joins us here on Inside Open Wheel. We're talking about how the company works. On that note, how can fans invest in their favorite driver with the Evo program?
Well, we are going to be what we say launching the company, meaning that we will be offering the opportunity for the ordinary fan or investor to invest in the company at the end of January this coming year. So that will be the time where you would be able to go directly online, go to Evo Invest website, and you can determine how much you would like to invest in the company and how many shares that will get you. And it would be just like a regular, typical stock purchase. We are going to be approved by the SEC. So there's rules and regulations and guidelines. Everything is absolutely transparent, which is great. The company has to follow all the rules and regs that you would have to do if you were going public, essentially. And that's going to happen, like I said, at the end of January. And then it's up to us to go and scout and bring on board drivers that we think that we can develop that will eventually be in championship status within IndyCar or in some of the other racing sports. That's not the only racing sport that we're going to be involved in.
Now, I know the silly season is underway for a lot of motorsports. Do you guys have a list of drivers that you're looking at to possibly invest in to get them in a seat somewhere along the ladder system as early as next season?
Yeah, we've been absolutely had our eyes and ears open and doing our due diligence. So when we technically launched the company that were we've got a short list going here that we will be able to execute at that point. But we're not pursuing anybody at this point because I don't feel that we should do that until we are actually live and active.
Now, we know that for the first time since 1999, there were no female drivers that qualified for the Indianapolis 500. Will Evo help diversify the driver pool and attract more women into the sport?
Well, thank you for asking that question. And that is one of our objectives, is to show that we can diversify the sport. And it is definitely our goal to find and get behind some really talented athletes, whether they're female or African-American or Latino or whatever. We want to make that one of our focuses of Evo, is to broaden the diversity of these sports. I think it's really necessary. And I think fans are not only interested in that, but I think they're demanding it now. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's interesting because it's sad because you see some drivers who we've seen come up through the ranks, and once again, they've fallen off because of, you know, funding, or there just wasn't the right seat at the right time. So to see more diversity in motorsports, it's going to be fantastic. You know, we talked to Willie T. Ribbs earlier on in this season, and that was one of the things. You know, even he was saying, you know, I'd like to see more diversity in motorsports. And, you know, he's watching a couple of drivers, and we take a look at Formula One. Lewis Hamilton, prime example of that, just broke the record on most wins of a Formula One driver. So the talent pool's there. It's just a matter of getting it from point A to the top echelon of, you know, whether it's motorsports or PGA or tennis.
Absolutely. And I think that we can have a big impact And that's what's so exciting for me as originally coming up with this concept, is seeing all the positive things that we can do and have such a big impact, not only in one sport, in many sports. And hopefully that will also help diversify the audiences for these sports that typically maybe weren't so diversified. So this doesn't happen overnight. I'm sure everybody realizes that. But I think that it is very, very important to start down this road and to start showing results. And I believe that we will then gain momentum and we'll have more and more opportunities to present to these minorities as well.
Now, what issues do you see having, you know, for allowing fans access to invest in Evo? Have you guys identified some issues that may come about? Are there any that you may foresee not happening, may foresee problems that you haven't anticipated?
Well, if I haven't anticipated, I can tell you this, is that it's just about the 2-year anniversary of the original conception of this program, let's call it. And what I've been very fortunate in doing is surrounding myself with a lot of talented people, including the team at Andretti. And in development of any new business, you always try to, think outside of the box and think what kind of roadblocks you could have. And also think of, well, who's not going to want to be in support of this? Who does this possibly hurt? And the good thing is that this is good for everybody. I mean, there isn't a negative that we can find for anybody associated with these sports, even having sponsors, the corporate sponsors that have been involved with motorsports for years. This gives them a great additional benefits that they would have never had before. It creates more fans for these individual series. It hopefully creates more viewership for the networks, more fans participating in viewing the on TV, coming to the races, all the above. I think that it is a bonus and a boost for everything related to motorsports and all these other sports. So I haven't found that there certainly isn't one thing sticking out there that's going to say, someone's going to say, well, they're not going to like this. I haven't found that yet. I think it's very unique, and we've been very mindful to think that we want to bring partners on board with us that can help promote this new opportunity for fans. And, we always say that now they're invested not only in the company, but in the success of these athletes like they've never been able to before.
And last but not least, another sports team that sells shares, and I say that in quotes, is the Green Bay Packers, where you buy a share and you have that is your ownership into the team. How is this separate from that concept?
Well, with the Green Bay Packers, for instance, you're investing. You have to be asked to invest, first of all. It's not like the shares are out there that anybody can just go and get. But you're also realizing that, and the fact that you are not going to get anything in return for that. You're basically investing into the Packers, saying, oh, you get to walk around and say you're invested in the Packers. There's not an expectation of benefits. And with Evo, every year we're going to take 5% of all of our athletes' winnings and distribute them like a distribution to all of the shareholders. So in addition to that, we're going to be having special benefits, whether they're parties and events at some of these sporting events where you're going to be able to be in meet the athletes and have we're going to have whole social media element for all of our athletes. And then all the investors are going to get exclusive access to behind the scenes and learn about the athletes that the ordinary fan wouldn't have access to. So the answer to that is we're going to be providing a lot of benefit for the investors, unlike the Packers, who you just essentially get the right to say, you know, you've invested in this team.
Well, it's a great concept. I'm excited to see how this can go through and increase the talent pool, not only in Andretti Autosport, but within the motorsports world. John Norman, thank you for joining us. How can fans follow the progress of Evo, and when everything starts up, how can they find out when they can start investing?
Certainly. Well, the easiest way is just to go to Evolution DG, which stands for Evolution Development Group, .com. So evolutiondg.com or evoinvest.com. And the website is populated with a lot of content, great videos to explain very simply how the program works. And there is a newsletter that you can sign up for, and I encourage everybody to do that. It doesn't cost anything to do that. And you will then be on our list, so to speak, and you'll get notified on the upcoming progress of the launch of the company in January, and you'll get advance notice. And you'll have some be able to get in before the ordinary public does. So good advantage to come in and sign up, and we greatly appreciate it.
John Norman, CEO of Evo, thank you for joining us. And yeah, we'll definitely keep tabs on who you guys bring in, because there's such a diverse talent pool within the Road to Indy, SCCA Pro Racing. So I think the next couple of years for this company is going to be really up and up.
Great. Well, thank you for your support. We're excited about it as well.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel is one of those drivers we've been watching coming up through the ranks. It's FR America's champion, Linus Lundqvist.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
A couple weekends ago, FR Americas wrapped up their 2020 season at the Circuit of the Americas, and one driver just had pure dominance all season. He was the driver to watch all year in any form of motorsport here in the United States, and he's going over to Indy Lights to go play with some of Open Wheel's greatest drivers who really starting to come up through the ranks. Linus Lundqvist joins us. I've got to say, man, watching your progress this season has been nothing short of spectacular. Congratulations on your well-deserved title. And now you get to go over to IndyCar and race at the same tracks that Felix Rosenqvist and Marcus Ericsson do.
Yeah. Firstly, thanks a lot. We've had a great season. Difficult to say otherwise. So, super happy as well to be able to finish the last race on top and finish on a high. So that was good. But now obviously focuses on for 2021 and come as well prepared as we can.
We're going to talk about that here in just a little bit. But I've got to ask, the big question is, you came over here to the States, had a quarantine for 2 weeks because we were in the height of the first wave of COVID. Mm-hmm. Did you imagine that your season would just be so dominant as it was when you first came over here?
No, never. I mean, the target both for me and the team was that we go in and fight for the championship. But we never dreamed of having a season like this. Because I think there were too many. I think especially when the Indy Lights guys joined our championship, obviously it raised the bar quite mm-hmm. a lot. And we knew that we were going to have a fight on our hands. And that's what we got as well. But we just managed to come out on top on almost every session. So just that small difference made a big difference in the end. So, yeah.
You know, when I was looking back at, you know, your practice sessions, your qualifying sessions, what was it that made you so fast at almost every racetrack you went to?
I don't know actually, because that was one of the things that I was a bit worried about, because I haven't been, well, I hadn't been to any of the tracks that we were going to race at, and on some occasions we only had like 2 20 or 2 30 minute sessions to to learn it. So it was a big ask, because obviously I need to learn the track, and obviously we need to set up the car as well for the track. But I think that's where we really prevailed as a team, is that every racetrack that we went to, after the first session, we were there or thereabouts with the car. We never had to change the car too much, and we always came pretty prepared, and it was always close to the window of what we ended the weekend with. So I think that helped a lot, because then I can mostly focus on my driving and getting up to speed on the circuit, and then obviously just making small adjustments on the car.
And then you had a quote-unquote veteran teammate in Jacob Abel. This is the year of the rookies in FR Americas for a multitude of reasons. But how much did James knowing these tracks ahead of time help you out, with the exception of COTA, because you know this is the first time these FR Americas cars were on track at COTA?
Yeah, no, James, James Rowe, one of my teammates, it was great. And he's, well, we've become really close friends. He lives not too far away from where I live here in India as well. We've actually, for the first three rounds, we drove to every circuit, and Virginia was like 12, 13 hours. So we had a couple of hours together in the car, but it was great to have him having along. But the team is so experienced as well. I mean, all of the guys, the mechanics and the engineer, and Christian, the team owner, obviously they've been part of the championship for some years now. So they know the tracks, they know the car, the ins and outs of it. So luckily for us, it wasn't too many new areas that we ventured onto. It was pretty much obviously looking in their data bank, see what they got, and then we go from there.
So good to see you're taking the Midwest approach of traveling. If you can get there by car in a day, don't even worry about flying.
Yeah, well, that's what we thought as well, and obviously it's a bit cheaper, but sometimes it's almost easier as well just to do the drive instead.
All right, let's talk about your season by the numbers. I compiled some numbers from this past season. 15 wins, including 8 in a row, 16 podiums, 16 poles. You lost Sebring 2 by 2/10 of a second over David Malukas, because the you qualified for the first race in FR Americas, but the rest of the races, you're set by your fastest lap in the race, which I think is a fantastic I think it's a fantastic way of qualifying for double or triple headers. Homestead Grid 1 was set by points because of the wet weather that moved through the area that week. 10 quickest practice sessions. Your smallest margin of victory was 3/10 of a second over Joshua Carr at the third VIR race. Your largest margin of victory at Homestead Miami Speedway Race 2, 14.9 seconds. Total margin of victory, 66.4 seconds. And you average about 4.4 seconds over your closest competitor at each finish. If that doesn't scream domination, I don't know what was. Just watching you on the track, you know, aside from what happened at the first Sebring race, you just had control of that car. You had control of the track. I mean, we keep asking, what was it? What was it? But for you, it had to be pretty, you know, just like, okay, get in there. You know, you get the car set up in practice and you're gone at the start.
Yeah, pretty much. Obviously, there's been a couple of races, and you said Virginia there as well. I had a close fight with in all three races, more or less, with Joshua Carr. And I've had some fight with Victor Franzoni and Malukas as well throughout the year. So there's been a couple of races where obviously we had some wheel-to-wheel action, which is nice. But some races as well, it's been, you know, just like you say, start went on, and then just put my head down, and then we were able to open up a gap. And that's how I try to at least approach ultra race. And obviously, you know, when you're in the lead, it's almost a bit easier, then you can just focus on yourself. You don't have any other cars to really think about other than the guys in your mirror. But in the end, we, like I said, I mean, the team has given me such a great car at every event, so I just did my part. So learn the track, try to be quick, and then obviously you do it race by race and see what happens with safety cars and restarts or yellow flags or anything around it. But I think we managed to put in a pretty good package.
Linus Lundqvist joins us on Inside Open Wheel. He is the FR Americas champion for 2020. Next year, you look forward to Indy Lights, and you're racing against some of the competitors. You race against some of the competitors already that most likely will be in Indy Lights, and David Malukas, possibly Victor Franzoni. But you get to see some other competitors as well. Kyle Kirkwood, Stingray Rob. Have you been able to watch some of the Road to Indy races and kind of get a feel for what some of these drivers, what their styles are like?
Yeah, I've been watching some of the Road to Indy races for sure. And obviously just trying to gather as much information about the American racing scene, because this is my first year in America. So obviously I wasn't too aware of all the bits and pieces of it. So still learning how the racing scene works here in America, but been trying to do some digging as well on the Road to Indy stuff and how, what the other drivers are like and et cetera. But yeah.
Now we know, that
I'm super excited for next year.
I was going to say, and you've seen the schedule already, you know, at least almost all the races. There is one weekend that is, you know, to be determined, but you take a look at these races and you're going to be racing, you know, streets of St. Petersburg, Long Beach. You've got, I can't remember if it's Long Beach or not. You've got Detroit, which is new on the schedule once again. Mm-hmm. Toronto. So it's a historic list of racetracks that almost anyone wants to go to. And I know that you talked to you know, Felix and Marcus. Have you talked to them about what it's like being on those racetracks? You know, what the setup is, the feel, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, we spoke a bit briefly about like favorite tracks here in the U.S. And I think one circuit that everybody mentioned was Road America. Mm-hmm. So that's one that I'm personally looking forward to just driving, because it just looks awesome, especially I think in a lights car.
Yep.
And even more so in an Indy car. But you know, when you have so much downforce and so much power at a high speed circuit, it looks cool. So super excited. I'm very excited to get to try the ovals as well, because that's a new thing for me.
Yep.
And then also looking forward to getting back on a street circuit, because that is still to date my favorite type of circuit. So that would be cool.
Oh, I love street circuits. They're some of my favorite.
Yeah.
Two to be to be at. Personally, as someone who's watched racing in the States, I have to say Toronto, Toronto and Long Beach are my two favorites. But I think you will enjoy a lot of these historic street circuits. Have you talked to any of the Indy Lights teams, kind of get something set up for next year?
Yeah, as everyone has to do, start planning for 2021. So we're having a conversation with Honda and HPD as well. At the same time, obviously speaking with teams and see what we can do for next year. But so far, nothing's decided.
Now, you brought on a new sponsor this year. I remember you were telling Craig Minervini it is the Home Depot of Sweden.
Yeah, easy explanation. It's like a hardware retail type of store. So,
okay, so it's kind of like a Menards, Home Depot. But so how are sponsors in Sweden reacting to your championship now? Are they more apt to come over and not only spend, you know, money on you for your season next year, but maybe help out Felix and Marcus for next season?
Yeah, I would hope that they're happy with my performance. It's been great. Firstly, it's been great having them on board. And it's been a relationship that obviously we've been working on that for the last couple of years or so. But we'll see now. Obviously, I'm still here in Indy as of right now. So we'll see whenever I go back to Sweden. We'll sit down and discuss again and see if they're interested in doing another partnership next year or for the years to come. But I hope so, because I think it will be a good thing to continue now that we've had this this great start to the partnership.
Well, it's got to be nice to be living in Indy too, because the climates have to be quite similar to what you're used to back home as well.
Yeah, I will say though, I'm not a massive fan of the cold like we have right now. It's like, I don't know, 4 degrees Celsius or something.
Yeah.
I'm happy I brought my like winter jacket from Sweden, which is like a meter thick or whatever.
Yeah, yep. I know the feeling. I've lived in the Midwest my whole life and I still hate the cold. Finally, I've got to ask you, as we said, you know, this is your first experience with American open wheel racing. What was the feeling of, you know, the American community coming in, and as you got better, you know, more recognized, what was the feeling of that open wheel community just accepting you as, you know, one hell of a driver?
Yeah, no, it's been awesome. Honestly, since day one, everybody has been so welcoming and really thoughtful, like, because they understand maybe the feeling of obviously moving here alone, not knowing anybody, and people really help and try to be friendly. It made me feel right at home, especially with my team as well. And then I think I'm a bit lucky as well to have James, my teammate, not living too far away from where I live as well. So I got something to do a couple of days of the week. It's been nice. And then I got to say as well, it's a big difference, both the cultural-wise, just living here, but also on the racing side of things. It's very different to Europe and European racing in a good sense. A lot more welcoming and almost a bit more family like. Whilst in Europe, it's not so much that. It's been great. I've been really loving it.
Well, Linus, I've got to say, I'm really looking forward to seeing what you can do next year. I think next year's Indy Lights season is going to be one for the ages, and I know that you're going to play a part in it. Let's circle back when you get that ride for 2021, and hopefully we'll have your owner on to talk about that as well. Thanks for joining us, and congrats on a great season.
Yeah, thanks very much, Jeremy.
We'll have more on Inside Open Wheel to come.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, as we were finishing a recording for our second episode of the week, we found out that this driver is the youngest F4 champion in the world. This is across the FIA F4 series, but nonetheless, he also had a great weekend at COTA and the FR Americas in his debut. Let's welcome VRD racer Hunter Yaney. I've got to say congratulations on your title, locking it up at Homestead. We'll talk about the FR Americas weekend because I did talk with Eric Brennan of FanRacing.live. We talked a little bit about, you know, what your thought process was going into it. But, man, I've got to say, you had a fantastic season in F4.
Yeah, it was a pretty good season. I started off having high hopes to win the championship. I was like, all right, let's go get this done, because I was, like, really excited to get into FR because I've already done some FR testing before Mid-Ohio to start the F4 season. And once I drove that car, I was like, all right, let's get F4 out of the way and get straight to FR.
Yeah, I mean, you've shown your worth in F4. Next season, I think it's going to be a pretty good season for FR Americas if things hold out the way they are. Last week we talked about, you know, at least HMD possibly staying on if they can get some rides. We've got a couple drivers we know that are staying next season. You're going to be running, it looks like, as well. So I've got to say, with the competition in F4, how many of your co-racers do you think you're going to see running with you up to F4?
Sorry, what was that?
How many drivers you raced with last year in F4 do you think are going to be in FR Americas with you next year, so you kind of get a taste of, you know, what you're racing against?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure some of the top runners from FR, I mean, F4 will come up to FR with me to try and challenge me again. Like, I'm sure Jose Blanco will be one of them. Maybe Dylan. I'm not sure yet, but should be a good time if they come up. It'll be really nice and fun.
And let's talk about those guys. You had a great competition between, you know, those two, Spike Kohlbecker. It seemed like, though, that, you know, you were able to get the edge ahead of them. And, you know, when they did beat you, you were able to take that into, you know, whatever the next race was.
Yeah, I did a lot of sim work before the next race. Mm-hmm. Like, before each race, like COTA, I did, like, every day 3 hours of COTA, just testing in Formula Renault 3.5, just prepping for the race. Worked on AeroWash stuff with my coach, Dakota Dickerson. And, yeah, really just prepping because Dakota's a FR Americas champion, and he was just telling me what it's going to be like and all sorts of stuff. So, yeah, he's really good at prepping me.
Yeah, and that's the next question with Dakota, having him being the former FR Americas champion. You know, he's able to say, okay, you're going to see this, you're going to see that, and it helps at certain tracks as well, because those two cars can be completely separate from, you know, from one another when you get to, like, a Sebring or Homestead Miami.
Yeah, definitely. Like, Homestead is a very, like, kind of smooth surface track and also kind of greasy when it gets hot out in the Florida sun. And Sebring is just really bumpy, pretty high commitment corners with all the bumps. So, yeah, very different tracks, but Dakota's always there to let me know how to drive them.
Talking with Hunter Yaney, the F4 champion, you said in one of your interviews after your championship that F1 is the goal. Have any European teams come across and talked to you since your championship?
Not that I know of right now, but hopefully soon. Hopefully we can do a couple of tests over in Europe or something. That'll be pretty cool. I did a test with Carlin last year in British F3 for a couple of weeks, one at Estoril, one at Barcelona, and one in France. So that was pretty cool. Hopefully I can do that again.
What's the main difference that you see between a North American track and a European track, especially when you've seen equipment now in, you know, quote-unquote F3 equipment?
Yeah, RS3 is a lot different over to their F3. Mm-hmm. Cause ours is a lot heavier, has a lot more aero, and it has a lot more power. So it's really heavy car. Just got to go a little bit slower on the corners than the British F3, but the British F3 is a lot faster in the corners and not as fast as ours in the straight. So pretty different, ways of driving. Just got to get used to it. But yeah, it's a pretty fun car.
And driving on some of the historic European tracks, you know, just in a testing session, granted, that's still got to be pretty cool to notch that off your racing bucket list pretty early.
Yeah, definitely. It was an awesome opportunity to go over there with Carlin, do some testing, see what it's all about. The tracks over there are quite a bit different, a lot smoother and like a lot bigger, like width-wise, just kind of like COTA over here. Because F1 races on them and all sorts of stuff like that, yeah.
All right, let's go and talk about your FR America's debut weekend. When I was talking with Eric last week on our F4 FRA segment, he said the main reason why you wanted to go up this weekend is because it was probably going to be the last chance for a little while that you were going to race against Linus Lundqvist. Did it live up to your expectations, at least on Friday practice? Because, man, I tell you, I was watching that on Race Monitor, and you were really scorching the timesheets.
Yeah, Friday was a pretty crazy day. We didn't really have any expectation for Friday, no pressure. Just went out there, and they're just like, okay, learn the track, learn this, learn that. So I just went out there, pushed the braking, all sorts of stuff, did what they told me to do. And, yeah, that day ended up pretty good. Now, Saturday, that was not the greatest day. It kind of reminded me of Mid-Ohio, my debut at Mid-Ohio in F4. Like, kind of cautious, kind of this. Like, yeah, kind of cautious, just trying to figure everything out. Also, I wasn't driving that well, but Sunday I showed up ready to rock, ready to go.
And it helps that, you know, your first practice session in a FRA race weekend, you have a track like COTA where if you push it, okay, you don't end up in the gravel unless you really screw up. You have that concrete, so that gives you a little bit of an advantage to really find the limits of the car.
Yeah, definitely. Like, if I was at Homestead, I'd probably, like, if I pushed the braking, most of the time you'd go off the track, go into the grass, and slide pretty far out into the grass. But here is really nice because you have a lot of pavement. It's a little bit like Sebring, to be honest, in some places. Like, you have a lot of pavement at Sebring, you have a lot of pavement at COTA, so like if you screw up, then you just kind of spin out and onto the pavement instead of going into the gravel or going into some grass, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense, and that helps with, that kind of shows the difference between the two top FIA standards, because, you know, Homestead Miami, that was built for, the road course was built for FIA GT1 in the late 90s, and then you take almost 20 years ago, or 20 years later, I should say, you have the standards that Formula One has where, okay, you know, we've got to have paved runoff. We've got to have the cars, you know, cars are wider, so the track's got to be wider. But, and, you know, you take a look at Homestead too, you wouldn't necessarily see a track that has an FIA track today that has, you're going straight from flat all the way to banks. So that, you know, regardless, you did well on that first day. Of FRA testing, but I've got to say this, it seems like no matter what kind of car you get in, you seem to be quick no matter what. What is it about getting you in a car and autumn, you know, like first couple laps, you know, you're just on top of the timesheets?
Yeah, Dan Mitchell, my engineer, Dakota Dickerson, and Pinky. They're all my coaches. They always tell me just to go out there and, like, push the limit at first and get up speed really quick. So that way I can, like, because the more you push the car in the first couple of laps, the more you learn about the car, and, like, the faster you learn, and that's how much further you get ahead of everybody else. So I always like to go out there and push the car right away, learn the parts you can push, learn the parts you can't push really hard, and it also helps learn the car a lot quicker, so it's really nice.
On the off season, that's going to be a lot of sim work. I know last time you and I talked, you were testing some of the Skip Barber cars. Is that going to be more of that as well to kind of shake down so they're ready for next season as well?
Yeah, could possibly do that. I mean, if anybody calls me to drive anything, I'll most likely go. Like, if somebody called me up right now, hey, you want to drive this car? I'd be like, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, anytime I get an opportunity, I always take it because you never know what could come from it. And yes, there's definitely going to be a lot of sim testing, a lot of working out, because I have some big expectations for FR, and I'm sure my team does as well. So just going to come away strong from this F4 championship, but it's already time to start getting ready for FR, so just going to start prepping for that.
It's amazing. You know, there's not a schedule out yet as of recording. But nonetheless, it still seems like the off season just isn't long enough to prep to get ready. And I think that next year it's going to be interesting, because, you know, we saw how good, you know, how the attention that Linus Lundqvist brought to the series, and it seems like American Open Wheel Racing in general, because it seems as if more Europeans are coming over and they want to play, because they know that if they want to win, they've got to race the best, and they have a shot at winning a scholarship to move up.
Yeah, like in FR, Linus really set the bar high. I was trying to catch him all weekend. I think if maybe we had one more race, maybe a fourth race, I probably could have been up there with him, maybe give him a run. But yeah, he's a really nice guy. I really enjoy all the Europeans coming over because it gives me a taste of what it's going to be like racing over there. Yeah, really, that's it.
Well, the cold drop in temperatures didn't help either, but that's racing. You know, you did the best you could. You ended up in the top five for the last race of the weekend. I've got to say this. I'm excited for next year. I'm excited for you. I can't wait to see what you're going to do here in FR Americas next year. How can fans follow your progress?
They can follow my progress by going to my Instagram. It's at Hunter Yaney, all lowercase, no space. Also, Hunter Yaney Racing on Facebook. You can follow me there. I also have a Hunter Yaney Racing website. So if you want to follow me, follow my progress, you can watch on there.
Well, congratulations. Well-deserved for being the youngest F4 champion in the world, and that's a record I think that's going to stand for a very long time. Nonetheless, I can't wait to see what you're going to do next year in FRA. Congratulations, Hunter.
Thank you.
Coming up next, Charlie Ante and I talk about the news of the week here on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
Well, I know I said we would have Charlie Ante with us. However, Charlie actually went to go vote yesterday, and the last I heard was he got out of the polling line. I don't know if he's been stopped, if he got lost or whatnot. I got done waiting for him. We'll send the search party out later. But Eric Brandon, FanRacing.live, our F4 FRA analyst, is going to take his spot. So, Eric, this is quite the change of pace. I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, the pressure's on. I mean, I feel like it's a little bit of a promotion here on Inside Open Wheel. So I'll try my best not to mess this up. And you know, who knows? If the search party is going to be out for a while, maybe I could keep the seat warm for as long as we're waiting for him to get back.
Well, pretty soon we're going to have to call out the Bloodhound, so we'll see what happens. All right, so a lot going on. We mentioned that Simon Sykes is the F1600 champion. We're going to find out here in the next couple of weeks if he goes to USF 2000, but there a couple of tests happened over the weekend in IndyCar. One of those was the oval test at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It happened last Wednesday and Friday. We do know that Scott McLaughlin did pass his rookie orientation program, so once we get to the month of May, he won't have to worry about that. Also, where is it? There we go. IndyCar decided to try a couple of new aerodynamic changes. Now, if you remember from the 500, it wasn't this what we thought it was going to be, because obviously the addition of the aero screen made things a little bit difficult. We saw Scott Dixon led most of the race. Once he got out front, he was up front. The only person to challenge him for the lead was Takuma Sato, the eventual Indianapolis 500 champion. So, Eric, the one thing I have to say, I know that this was a short and strange season, but kudos to IndyCar for coming in and saying, okay, we've got to fix this for next year.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Jeremy, I am so torn. You know, I think back to the era of the DW12, and we know the potential of how good and riveting an Indy 500 could be. But we also know that, you know, a lot of drivers consider that to be, I don't want to use the term Russian roulette, but it wasn't necessarily pack racing, but it was kind of a free-for-all. There wasn't, I don't want to say there wasn't a lot of skill involved in making it happen, because of course there was, but you would have people who were simply in the right place at the right time. And, you know, in some cases, setup wasn't under a microscope like it has been. Obviously, driver talent was under a microscope, as always, and it made the racing so compact and so tight. So I think having that as a bar to go off of for those years that package was in place, from, you know, even when they got back to the different type of aero kits from 2012, 2015, and then it started to evolve a little bit. I mean, the racing was phenomenal. And as we've seen since the changes were made to this style package, and it's been tweaked a little bit, I don't think the racing has been, you know, off par or off of an exciting scale the last couple of years. I think, like you said, you know, being that the challenge with the lack of track time and the condensed season, and, you know, now we're starting to see there's not that many larger ovals to go off of. You know, the only barometer we really have besides Texas is Indy. And, you know, I think this is the right move. I do think that this year's 500 was a little bit lackluster. I think that there was an opportunity to get more eyes on it. We saw on a number of occasions that it was still tough to drive in traffic by yourself. We saw people losing control of their cars and finding the limit on more than one occasion. But I do think something needs to be done, because it seems as though that unless you're in the first two or the first three cars in that line, you really don't have a shot to work your way forward, no matter how good your car is. I mean, we saw some of the I mean, we expected Marco to fade after the pole lap that he had set, but we saw Alexander Rossi, who had one of the best cars all day long, get shuffled to the back after a pit road mishap, and he just couldn't get back to the front at all and ended up making one of those mistakes. So I would like to see a fine line or a common ground. I don't necessarily need to see it go back to what it was in the DW12 era, but I would love to see where a guy who has proven to have the speed, have the pace, and definitely have the racecraft rebound from a mistake, because right now it looks like it's a kiss of death if you get beyond, you know, sixth place in the running order. And hopefully they found that common balance with some of the testing they did.
And here's the one thing I'm worried about, though. I think back to 2001, the CART Texas 500K, where CART came in cooler conditions, and they did what is known as a compatibility test, which IndyCar does for almost all tracks, whether you're testing or whether you're racing. Cooler conditions, okay, they said it was fine. The second they got to the Texas weekend, it was horrible. It's something that I'll talk to Paul Page about later on, you know, in the series before we end the year, because Paul's going to be on with our Legends of Open Wheel, which I know you're very excited about, Eric. But I've got to say this. I'm happy that this was all spearheaded by Tino Bonelli and Bill Pappas. Bill's, we know, is a fantastic engineer with many teams. And aerodynamic director Tino Bonelli has been in charge of it. What helped them was the rain on Thursday. It was supposed to be a Wednesday-Thursday deal. I joked with my wife, said, hey, let's go down to Indy for testing on Friday. We didn't, obviously. But, you know, there were two and three car packs that were racing each other. I did see that one of the sessions saw Takuma Sato and Joseph Newgarden, you know, nose to tail on the front straightaway. But I don't disagree. Something needs to be done, but I worry that we're putting too much emphasis on this, because, as you know, the hotter that track gets, it's going to race a hell of a lot more different than what we saw, you know, 40, 50 degrees, you know, this past week.
Yeah, and I was actually a little bit surprised at the timing of this test session. I mean, like, I'm not necessarily sure what the rush was to hurry up out of St. Pete and get these guys over to Indy. I mean, granted, a lot of the teams are based out of Indianapolis, so it's not like they had a long haul after they got home. But, you know, nevertheless, kudos to the series for putting their best foot forward and beginning the approach to 2021, and also taking the optimistic approach that the Indy 500 is going to take place on Memorial Day weekend like it should. But you're right. It was a huge, stark contrast to what we may see in May. And it really does make me wonder how valuable this information is that they were able to compile. Judging by the resource in which you and I have been able to lean on, which was the Racer Magazine article that Marshall Pruitt put back, you know, it seems like they think that they have, and in fact, I'll steal the quote. It says, you know, they think they filled their toolbox and they have enough parts and knowledge to go back and do something with it. So from their perspective, they think that it may be worth something, but I agree. I hope they don't go down a particular path to what they think is going to be a solution to what is not a big problem, but it's enough of a problem that it could impact the show. And I hope they don't put all their eggs in one basket based on this go around, because it's gonna be totally different once they get back out there. And I really hope they find a way to get a spring test in place where the weather will be a little bit more comparable to what we have come the end of May.
Yeah, and you know, with the CAD that everybody has nowadays, I think that might help them out. So maybe they got a good baseline. You know, it's only time will tell. And I know that once we get, you know, into April, we're going to see that testing once again, where we get conditions closer to what we see during the month of May. So stay tuned to that. I do want to talk about the Honda situation. We did reach out to Honda. We'll talk about that here in the next segment. But before we get to a commercial break, I want to talk about a couple of things coming from the F4 FRA paddock. You may have seen this as well, Eric. Jason Alder is the first driver to be confirmed for the 2021 F4 program. He runs with VRD. You know, that whole program is going to be great for him coming up from karting into a championship winning seat. And I'm excited over the next couple of months. I think we're going to see a lot of drivers sign up. You know, some are going to stay in their own seats. We know of at least a couple that, you know, they're going to stay where they're at, but we haven't heard officially. But right now, Jason Alder kind of sets the first foot forward and saying, yeah, I'm going to run next season in F4.
Yeah, and there are a few, you know, perspectives that we could look at this. For one of which, Jason, who I had the opportunity to meet, albeit briefly, at last year's Road Course World Finals, which is the big legend car race that happens down in Georgia. Mm-hmm. Actually, they're preparing for that race this year, this weekend. And he was penciled in as a guy who was incredibly diverse. I mean, his karting resume, which was outlined in the VRD press release, is one thing. But to watch him adapt and be able to wheel a legend car, which, you know, yeah, it takes you back to the old, you know, mid-30 sedans that, you know, that the series is conceptually based off of. But to some extent, they're open wheel race cars. You don't want to make contact with somebody else because you can climb over a tire and whatnot. And He seems very versatile, and seeing this excites me because I think that he has the ability to kind of pick up where Hunter Yaney left off. Now, that's the other part of this, though. Knowing that he is getting into top-tier, championship-ready, and championship-winning equipment, that's going to mean he's going to be under a lot of pressure very quickly. And we saw how well Hunter was able to transition from what he would describe himself as a mediocre career on a kart level into what turned into a championship effort in F4. Now you have Jason coming into the frame, and he's coming from an even more diverse background with a little bit more of an illustrious resume up to this point in his career, and he's going to have a great opportunity to keep the momentum rolling. So I wonder how much pressure that puts on this young man heading into a season where we're still waiting on the finality of what the schedule is going to look like. And also, from what I'm hearing, he's going to be paired up with Eric Evans on the VRD front. This is unofficial, just information I was able to gather at the banquet back in Austin, Texas. And that'll be something fun to watch as well, because throughout the year, you know, Hunter Yaney had a couple of different teammates that came in there to challenge him. We see it all the time with the Crosslink Kiwi guys. If you have a tandem of Alder and Eric Evans in there, they're going to have a little bit of an inner battle, almost like what we talked about with Linus Lundqvist and FRA and the Global Racing Group, and how it kind of upped the ante on the performance of the other three because Linus was doing so well. And I'm with you. I think it provides us a very interesting platform heading into the season, which we're still waiting on some final developments, not just from the race team, but on the series front. And this being one of the first pieces of the puzzle to come into frame, it does ratchet up the intensity as far as things to watch. And I'm very excited for what Jason may have in store. And I'm excited for the team to see that they can go from one very young and enthusiastic driver like Hunter Yaney, who's still in the fold. The plan still appears for him to compete in FRA in 2021. But now to have somebody of equal caliber of talent, at the very least, slide into that spot and keep that momentum rolling on the F4 side.
Well, kudos to Dan Mitchell as well for bringing in, you know, another great talent. And I think that that shows that that VRD program is, you know, top notch. And I think that, you know, we're going to see that especially next year when they have to run two consecutive winning program. So that's something to keep an eye out for. Something I didn't show you in our crosstalk, and I'll send it to you and we can talk a little bit about next in the next commercial break. Reddit's F1 feeder series, I follow that to kind of, you know, just get a gauge on what's going on in the other F3s, F4s around the world. About a week or so ago at, I can't remember what the last F1 race was, there was an F3 car that was there doctored up. And it, on the side pods, it had Formula Alpine, or Formula Alpine, however you know you want to say it. And it had decals for F Regional and Euro Cup. So maybe the investigative reporter I am, I shot an email to Amy Greenway over at SCCA. And I asked her, you know, I sent her the link, sent her the picture. And I asked her, I'm like, look, I know that Reddit's as good as a resource as Wikipedia, but I'm assuming this wouldn't affect the FR Americas title. So she did confirm that it's only for Euro Cup. It's not for Asia, not for the Americas. So if you see that, don't freak out. We're still going to be FR Americas next year. But it is something interesting to see develop over in Europe. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not going to be surprised if something like that happens here, but like a Formula Honda or something like that. But nothing as of yet. It's still FR Americas for at least the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and, you know, the concept of the name change back when it was just F3, you know, their long-term goal for that series is to really take part in every country that is in North America. They had a race penciled in for Canada. They're trying to work out a deal to get something done in Mexico. And, I mean, all that is still on the table. But, you know, with everything that's going on in the world right now, and especially with numbers fluctuating on the COVID-19 front, you know, it's really put a hold on that long-term plan, which – you know, my heart hurts for the series because I think it's a fantastic idea because it allows F4 to be, you know, the homegrown American seed where we could water the talent and allow it to grow and expand. And even though F4 has an international flair in its own right, it's taking place here on American soil. And instead of forcing these drivers to head to Europe in order to move up, it gives them another avenue where they get to stay a little bit closer to home, but it still has an international feel and an international schedule. So I applaud them for sticking with it. I hope that they continue to go down that pathway. And I just really hope the world allows those dreams and hopes to come to fruition.
All right, coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Eric and I will talk about the Honda fastest seat in sports drama and the test at Barber. The wait is over. Inside Open Wheel is now on Apple Podcasts. So no matter where you get your favorite podcast from, you can always get a new episode of Inside Open Wheel on that same program. Heck, you can even get a push notification right when we release new episodes. Once again, Inside Open Wheel, we're now on Apple Podcasts.
This is Inside Open Wheel with Jeremy Scott.
We've sent the hounds out. Charlie still hasn't come back. I don't know what the hell's going on. Eric Brennan, our F4 FRA analyst, joins us. And you had a look at that development over in Europe. And the paint scheme looks really cool.
It actually does. I mean, I'm actually in love with this livery. I don't know. I haven't had a chance to break out the F1 game yet for the Xbox ever since we moved. But when we do, I may try to mirror this because it's a good looking ride.
Oh, yeah. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens over in Europe. All right. So the IndyCar Barber test was this past weekend as well. And actually earlier this week. So that would be Monday, if I remember correctly. It's been this week has felt like a month already. So we actually got times, which is very rare. I couldn't use my normal resource, and that's a story for another day. 2020 IndyCar Rookie of the Year, Arenas VK, with a minute 5.6. Colton Herta, 1/10 of a second behind. Pat O'Ward also at the test. Alexander Rossi, Jack Harvey round out your top five. That's Connor Daly, Ryan Hunter-Reay, Marcus Ericsson, Scott Dixon, and Sebastian Bourdais making his way into the top 10. Alex Palou, 11th fastest in his debut for Chip Ganassi Racing, and I'm just going to eat crow on that comment. Antonio Felix da Costa with a good showing for Rahal Letterman Racing in 12th, Joseph Newgarden 13th, James Hinchcliffe 14th. 15th is Felix Rosenquist in his debut with Arrow McLaren SP, and the top 15 cars all within a second of each other. Some other notables, Simon Pagenaud 17th, Scott McLaughlin 19th, and Jimmy Johnson 2.7 seconds behind in 21st. Still a long way to go for Johnson, but I've got to say this. First of all, his driver coach is going to be Dario Franchitti, so that's not, you know, he'll get faster. Second of all, to throw somebody like Jimmy Johnson into an Indy car at Barber is like throwing a kid onto a bike that's never ridden a tricycle and saying, have fun without the training wheels.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably putting it lightly. I'd say it's probably like putting him on a motorcycle instead of having any training wheels. I mean, Barber is tough.
Yeah.
And the one thing I love about the Jimmy Johnson storyline, and I've seen a couple of comments out there on the socials, and some people are already saying, you know, it's not going to go well. This seems like just a PR move. Jimmy has seemed, even back when they started the esports thing as a supplement to the real racing, where we were in the peak of the COVID pandemic earlier in the season. I don't know if people got to see, but he purposely had his sim rig built to emulate an Indy car.
Yep.
And not only has he been taking that time in the sim seriously, but he's had other time in more legitimate sims outside of the comfort of his own home. And we all know that he keeps himself in phenomenal shape. Barber's a place that forces you to be on top of your level physically in order to withstand that place. I know that the stopwatch makes it look like that he is well off the pace, but the fact is he hasn't had the chance. He hasn't even finished making his final Cup start, which is going to come this weekend in Phoenix, the last race of the year. I'm really excited to see how this pans out. We do know he's in great equipment. We do know that he has great people behind him. I think that him and Dario are very similar, not just as far as their racing success, but I think as far as mindset and approach. They're both very calm. They're both very composed. They're both very information heavy as far as how they try to tackle their weekly ventures at a racetrack. And I really think Jimmy's going to surprise a lot of people come 2021. And I think it's great for the series. I think it's great for him. And I would not be discouraged. I'm with you. I'm very happy we actually got some times to go off of, because that is a rarity. But I would not get discouraged about his number just yet for those who may be questioning his ability when he hasn't logged near the amount of miles that some of his fellow rookies in the series are going to be putting together. I mean, Scott McLaughlin got more track time. He had the chance to run at St. Pete, and he too was 1.3 seconds off the quick time back there in 19th of the running order. So both of them, I think, are going to be right up there in the mix once we get towards the beginning of the season come 2021. And I think they both add a very, very interesting and tasteful flavor to the series. Not that they needed it, you know, that we've built up a number of personalities in the sport over the last 5 years, but it helps. I think they're great ads, and I'm hyped to see where it goes.
And this coverage coming to us from the-race.com, also known as The Race. Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens on the road courses. I think that both Johnson and McLaughlin, both are going to do real well. Obviously, both are accomplished road racers in their own series. You know, Johnson obviously being really good at road courses. We won't even talk about that 2000 Busch crash in Watkins Glen. Scott McLaughlin winning Bathurst, three-time defending Supercars champion. So it's going to be interesting to see next season. Speaking of that, one thing I didn't know, I don't know if you saw this, but there was rumors about that Connor Daly could be in position for that 26 car that James Hinchcliffe has been rumored as a shoe-in. The race reports before the St. Petersburg weekend, James Hinchcliffe appeared to have the 26-inch race seat seal, but some troublesome ending to his weekend there, and in the 14th in classification, where his teammates are 2nd, 4th, and 7th, could be regarded as worrying. But that, I think, is being a little presumptuous, because Hinchcliffe himself said, look, it was brain fade. It was stupidity. It happens. You know, if I'm Michael Andretti, I'm going to take a look at his overall performance on that weekend. Phenomenal. We know how good the Hinchcliffe is at St. Petersburg. Everybody has problems. Heck, the Andretti's hit each other in Detroit And oh, they also hit the safety truck too.
Yeah, it was a wild weekend for them as a whole. It's funny because the comparison that we were referencing cited the troubles that Hinchcliffe had, yet we forget that Alexander Rossi probably had the best car in the field at some point, led the most laps in the race, and he ended up wadding himself up at some point as well. So, I mean, like you said, it happens. I think when the word came out that Veach was going to vacate that ride, it was an obvious conclusion that Hinchcliffe was going to get the nod for the final few races. And I also think, you know, it's hard to believe that you have to go all the way back to the early 2010s when Hinchcliffe started his GoDaddy tenure as Danica's replacement at the Andretti Autosport stable, and he had a really good run. And I think that, you know, he left on good standing, and I think that he's a sponsor's dream. You know, I know that Connor Daly, he's done magic, specifically at the Carlin level with that team on ovals, especially after splitting the ride there with Max Chilton. And it sounds like that he's found a pretty good home at ECR, and I don't think he would mind for that rotation to continue. And he was also very quick as well. He routed them off their sixth in the test to place at Barber. He's got the pace. He's finally getting the opportunity he's worked so hard to have. But I don't think it would be fair for anybody to hold St. Pete and St. Pete alone against Hinch in terms of his chances to end up in that car in 2021. I think if you're looking at the free agent market, he is at the top of the list. I mean, you know, it's very, very hard to ignore the fact that this is a guy who I almost look at it as if his career has gone down a similar path to where Dan Weldon was in 2011, where he got involved in TV a little bit, came back, had some flashes of brilliance, and then we never got to see how that story ends. Hinchcliffe's in a position where he had to step back, settle for a part-time ride, showed us some flashes of brilliance despite St. Petersburg. Obviously, we love his action on TV. Did a great job covering the Iowa races. That was probably some of my favorite commentary of the whole season. But he belongs in a race car, and he's proven it time and time again. And I think he deserves one more shot, and I'm willing to bet he's going to get it in that Andretti car.
Well, I like how everybody, you know, was kind of surprised that Hinchcliffe was a hell of a commentator. I mean, he used to do Champ Car commentary after his Atlantics ride in 2006, 2007. He did some A1GP stuff. So I'm not surprised. He's going to have a career in television after his racing career is over. And yeah, I agree. I think he's a shoe-in for that 26 car. And if he's not, then Honda needs to take a serious look at their Andretti you know, their Andretti alignment. Oh, by the way, speaking of that, holy cow, this past week for Honda and Andretti has been nothing short of egg in face. The Drive reported earlier in the week that Mario Andretti was going to be out of a ride. Then Robin Miller and Honda said, no, that's not going to happen. Well, then it turns out that Honda is, I'll let Dan Layton of PR of Honda let us know what's going on. Okay, I did reach out to them because, you know, so much back and forth. So here's the official word on what the fastest seat in sports is going to be. Honda will no longer sponsor the fastest seat in sports activation. Our contract for the program ended with the conclusion of the 2020 IndyCar Series season is not being renewed. Honda has committed to IndyCar in the form of a new long-term agreement that we recently signed. The fastest seat in sports was a great marketing activity for Honda, but after a 15-year run, we are taking this opportunity to change up some of our marketing activities surrounding our involvement in IndyCar to more closely align with our production cars. Honda is extremely proud of our association with Mario Andretti, arguably the greatest racing driver ever, and everything that he contributed to the fastest seat in sports program. He was there from day one and has been an invaluable brand ambassador for Honda and the sport of IndyCar. So what it sounds like to me, contract was up, and we saw that Honda's pulling out of Formula One, so they decided, you know what, let's take a look at, you know, our portfolios. A lot of companies are doing these days, and they decide that, you know, maybe that wasn't the best way of resources. You know, let's try a sponsor activation at the racetrack, and that's a great, you know, resource. We see Chevy do that at a lot of different tracks. I see them do it at Indy. I see them doing it at Detroit. So I think we're going to see more of that from Honda, and it's nothing against the Dallara two-seater program, which has been a fantastic program. And, you know, with Roger Penske's backing, I think they're going to get a new sponsor. I wouldn't be surprised if Mario Andretti's back in the seat, regardless if he's, you know, with Honda or if it's a Honda shod, two-seater or not. But what a tumultuous week for Mario Andretti finding out you could be fired over a news article. then find out that, oh yeah, they're not going to sponsor your ride anymore.
Yeah, I know. I know we've heard stories about NBA coaches who, the minute their plane lands, when they get back from an away game, they find out they've lost their job. Remember Alex Bowman?
Yep.
Found out on Twitter that he lost his stock car ride at Tommy Baldwin Racing a few years ago. But, like, here's the thing. I remember back to the Southern 500 a couple of years ago where they allowed Richard Petty to be the pace car driver for the field, and he stayed out for an extra lap. And they gave him the black flag. And it's, the expression was, you can't black flag the king.
Yep.
Mario Andretti is one of the biggest names where I have friends back in New York, which is not a hotbed for motorsports, who know the Mario Andretti name. They don't just know the name. They know his face. They know where he came from. They know his story. This man did not deserve to go down this pathway. And I really hope that it will fall on just an egregious mistake by an intern or something silly. And, you know, hats off to Honda for stepping up and taking the brunt of the blame on this, but it's just not a good look. And I think that it was documented very well as far as the how we got here. Here's how it happened. We're sorry it happened, because that's important. And, you know, after a year like this, I think everybody's realigning their cost analysis and their spending and all that. But I love this concept, though. And I love it because this two-seater opportunity has been one of the best ways to bring in big name figures, celebrities outside of the sport, other athletes, whether it be for stick and ball sports or other forms of motorsports, and truly give them a taste of what it's like to be in an Indy car. And I think that having that available, not just for, you know, that upper echelon of a racing fan, but even for the average Joe, you know, I think that that's a connection, let alone with Mario Andretti at the wheel, that needs to remain in place. And I'm with you. I think that I could see that, you know, Penske bringing it back to some capacity, but this just seems like a total PR nightmare. And I feel bad that Mario had to be dragged to the mud like this. And I'm sure that his relationship with Honda is going to be, you know, strong enough where they'll rebound from it, you know, Andretti Autosport affiliation aside. But nevertheless, it was one of those things that was almost cringeworthy while reading your way through how it took place. Just a bad set of circumstances for all involved.
And here's the thing, too. I saw a lot of people saying, oh, it's because of Mario's age. The insurance, you know, wouldn't insure him. Look, if the man can still do 200 plus mile an hour laps at Indy, I have no problem with him doing the two seater. I trust him over some other drivers that I've seen on the racetrack. I'll admit it. I will be the first to admit it, that I would trust an 82 year old multi-time champion to drive me around a racetrack in a race car 200 miles an hour.
Yeah, I mean, and look, you know, we've seen honorary pace car drivers wad things up. What was that, Detroit a couple years ago?
Yeah, now he's the CEO of Chevrolet.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, and that was at pace speed. So, and I know that they've had other people in there. I remember Ari Langdike Jr. had the title as somebody who would fill in when Mario wasn't around. And, you know, there's a couple, but Mario said it, you know, in the transcript that was posted at thedrive.com, a story that you sent over to me, which I think outlines the timeline quite well. He said, you know, I do this because I want to. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing it because it's something that I'm obligated to do. It's something that he enjoys because he loves being at the racetrack and he loves doing more than just observing. And I don't think anybody would turn down a ride with Andretti, you know, well, with Mario, I should say. Regardless of age, I don't care if he's around when he's 110. I'd still get in the backseat of a car with him at any point, at any speed, because he's Mario, you know?
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens with that. I hope that, you know, Dallara and or IndyCar finds another sponsor, puts Mario back in there, because that's, you know, it's a great program. And, you know, they still have great drivers that get in there. I know Ari Langdike Jr. gets in there. I think Dario did a seat. I'd love to sit in with him in a ride. Gabby Chavez has been doing it, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens. All right, Eric, I thank you so much for joining me. I think I got to send the helicopter up for Charlie, because this is not like him to do that.
Hey, no worries, Charlie. I will keep the seat warm as long as you want. But as long as you're safe and happy and we survive through this week, I think I'll be happy to hear you back on here next week, my friend. Thanks for having me, Jeremy. I appreciate it.
No problem. In a couple weeks, we're going to have you back on for the F4 FRA review. We're going to try and get our friend John Phippen as well, so we can get his analysis, talking about the two seasons. Also, next week, Dave Dusick from Racetrack Engineering is going to be on. You've seen his work.
if you've watched The Road to Indy. So you know what kind of videos they have. We're going to talk about how he got started and how he has the empire now of on-track cameras for race officials. Also, hoping to get our Road to Indy champions on board, talk about their seasons, Christian Rasmussen and Stingray Robb. As always, we thank you for listening to us. Oh, we're on TuneIn now, so got another... quickly expanding the Inside Open Wheel empire. Until then, I'm Jeremy Scott. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.